New York. Good afternoon. A pleasure to once again have the monthly share by Rabbi Leibowitz. We also want to wish Rabbi Leibowitz mazel tov. We understand his son is engaged and getting married, Bezrat Hashem, next month. So a big mazel and bracha. Without any further ado, the share by Rabbi Leibowitz.
Thank you so much, Rabbi Muskin. It's always so wonderful to be with you. And thank you, everyone, for coming to join, to learn together. We're continuing our series on great Rebbeim and great Talmidim. And the idea
Rabbi, before you begin, would everybody please mute themselves? Okay. Please mute. Okay.
So we're continuing our series on great Rebbeim and great Talmidim, where we're going to try to trace relationships between Rebbeim and Talmidim, because so much of how the Torah is transmitted relies on a Mesoras HaTorah, relies on a Rebbe giving the Torah to a Talmud and a Talmud receiving from a Rebbe, as opposed to just learning from Svarim and from books. It is unlike any other discipline when it comes to learning Torah. So this month I thought we would talk a little bit about Rav Elchanan Wasserman and his relationship with the Chafetz Chaim. It's an interesting choice because Rav Elchanan Wasserman had many Rebbeim, but I thought the relationship with the Chafetz Chaim seems to me, I don't know that much about the history and about Rav Elchanan's life, but the little bit that I do know, it seems that it was very transformative in Rav Elchanan's life. Rav Elchanan, just to give a little bit of background, was born in 1874. His father was a shopkeeper. At the age of 15 years old, he went to Telz to learn by Rav Lazer Gordon and of Shimon Shkap, so those were his first two really great Rabbeim, Rav Lazer Gordon and Rav Shimon Shkap, and then when he would come home during Bein HaZmanim, he would go to Shiurim by the Rav of his town. At that time, before he had made Aliyat HaRitzrol, Rav Avram Yitzchak HaKohen Cook. So he had three great Rebbeim, for those keeping score right now, of people that he was able to learn Torah from. Later on, he met Rav Chaim Soloveitchik at a health resort, and he became very, very attached to Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, and that is great Rebbe number four for Rav Elchanan Wasserman, and he certainly considered Rav Chaim one of his Rebbeim. In fact, when I was thinking about doing a shiur about Rav Elchanan, I was going to do Rav Elchanan and Rav Chaim, because Rav Chaim was also a Rebbe of Rav Elchanan, and his style in learning is so similar to that of Reb Chaim. His chidushim are so similar to that of Reb Chaim, but I decided I'm going to save Reb Chaim for Rav Baruch Ber. We're going to save Reb Chaim for a different one of his Talmidim, and we'll instead focus on the Chafetz Chaim. So where did the Chafetz Chaim come in? Rav Elchanan's already an adult, and he hasn't really attached himself to the Chafetz Chaim yet. So Rav Elchanan got married in 1899 to the daughter of Rav Meir Atlas, who's a Rav of Salant, and he lived in his father-in-law's house for several years, learning and being supported by his father-in-law, and turning down rabbanus after rabbanus. He was a known genius, and he kept on turning down ksav rabbanus, appointments for rabbanus, including in big cities like Moscow. And he just continued to learn. He did, however, decide that it wasn't enough to learn Torah. He wanted to teach Torah as well. So he started a small masifta, and in 1903 he began this masifta, and he started to earn a reputation as an unbelievably great teacher, as someone who was a great Bal Masbir, who explained things very well, and who connected to the Talmidim and inspired them greatly. Now, around 1907, a few years after starting this Masifta, there was another local Rav that wanted to start a Masifta. Rav Elchanan got the sense that it was going to cause machlokas, and he therefore walked away. He shut down his Masifta, and he walked away, and the other Rav took over and became a Rosh Masifta, and Rav Elchanan went back to learning full time in his father-in-law's house. Now, because of that act of shutting down the Masifta, that opened up Rav Elchanan to be able to study in a Kolel Kodshim in Radin, and that's where he met the Chafetz Chaim. When he went from 1907 to 1910 to learn in a Kolel Kodshim in Radin, that was headed by the Chafetz Chaim. The Chafetz Chaim was a very big believer in studying Kodshim. The Chafetz Chaim writes about this, that he thinks that it's very important to learn Kachim halach lemaisa, not just with lamdus because it's an enjoyable limud. They say one of the reasons briskers enjoy learning Kachim is because you can say whatever chidushim you want. You're not constrained by halacha because no one practices anything in Kachim nowadays. So you could say whatever you want, and it gives you a lot more room for creativity. That's what they say was one of Rav Soloveitchik's great contributions to learning, is that he used brisker lamdus in the area of brachos and tefillah, where you're very constrained because there's halacha and there's practice and there's centuries of ongoing practice. So you have to be very careful and very loyal to minhag. Kachim gives you a certain freedom. But the Chafetz Chaim was interested in learning kachim halacha lemaisa, because Chafetz Chaim lived every single day with the notion that Mashiach could come at any moment, one of the Karei Amuna, and he believed it. He believed the Beis HaMikdash was going to come at any moment, and he said, what's going to happen? Ribbono Shalom is going to give us the Beis HaMikdash, and then we're going to look at the Ribbono Shalom and say, okay, we have a Beis HaMikdash, what are we supposed to do with this thing? Well, we don't even know how to do Avodah, we don't know what to do with the Beis HaMikdash. So Chafetz Chaim believed very strongly, if I could just ask if you just join now to please mute yourself, I'm getting some feedback. I'd rather not. I see where it's coming from, but I'd rather not call out the name. So if I could just ask, maybe I'll send a note. I don't want to. I'm going to send a
private. Everyone, please mute.
I'm going to send a private message. Okay, so hopefully you got the private message. So the Rav Elchanan, where was I? Rav Elchanan was with the Chafetz Chaim, learning in his Kachim Kolel, and the reason the Chafetz Chaim had a Kachim Kolel, there he goes. The reason the Chafetz Chaim had a Kachim Kolel was that he wanted to learn Kachim Halach Lemaisa, because he thought it was very necessary in order to know how to handle a Beis HaMikdash once we get a Beis HaMikdash. And Rav Elchanan learned there, and he learned while he was in the Kachim Kolel, he had a Chavrusa for 18 hours a day with another young Talmud Chacham by the name of Rav Yosef Shlomo Kahaneman, who of course later became the Panovich Rav. So Rav Elchanan, you know, rubbed elbows with just about every great Torah mind of that generation. In fact, someone sent me a friend of mine and a wonderful historian, Dovi Safir, who lives locally here and writes the Jewish History column together with Yehuda Geber from Mishpacha magazine, sent me an interview with Rav Chaim Shmuel Levy, who learned in Radin. And in that interview, this fellow who learned in Radin said, oh, I'm muted now. This fellow who learned in Radin had said, this Rav Chaim Shmuel Levy said, that Friday night we used to go in, as many Bachram who could would pack into the place. It was standing room only. There were no chairs. Even Rav Elchanan Wasserman would stand in the corner and listen to every word, making sure that he wouldn't miss a single word that the Chafetz Chaim had said. And then this Rav Levin writes, he says that the Rav Elchanan was a great admirer of the Chafetz Chaim. And he says that Rav Elchanan used to tell over the story every year about the Dibbuk. There's a famous story about how there was a girl that would seem to have been possessed by some sort of a demon or something. She couldn't stop talking. There was something wrong with her. And the Chafetz Chaim paskined on the Dibbuk that the Dibbuk should leave. And they left. And the Dibbuk left and the girl was cured. And, you know, typically in our circles, we don't tell such stories about things like this, about these kinds of miracle working. I remember when I was in Yeshiva University, there used to be a Rebbe in Yeshiva, passed away already. His name was Rabbi Drillman. And Rabbi Drillman was a Talmud of Rav Elchanan Wasserman. He learned by Rav Elchanan. In fact, if I'm not mistaken, he wrote the Kovit Shiurim. The Kovit Shiurim, which is Rav Elchanan's Sefer, was written based on Talmidim's notes of the Shiurim. So I think he wrote up the Kovit Shiurim on one of the Masechtas. I don't remember which Masechta. I want to say Chulin, but I'm not 100% sure. And Rabbi Drillman told us that he said, you know, whenever you hear a story, It was funny how Rav Drillman expressed it. He said, whenever you hear a story about how serious Rav Elchanan was and how there was always that one bachur that was making a leitzonos and was making a joke out of something, he said, that bachur was usually me. I was the jokester. I was the one that was asking the chutzpah the question. So he said that one time Rav Elchanan was talking, or someone mentioned something about the Dibbuk, and Rav Drillman made some sort of snide remark about, you know, we don't believe in such things. And Rav Elchanan, he said, looked at me with a look that shot right through me. It could have killed me, the look that he gave me at that point in time. And Rav Elchanan said, I saw it with my own eyes. The Chafetz Chaim exercised a Dibbuk. So I don't know what to do with that story, but that's the story that Rav Drillman told us. And this was the reverence that Rav Elchanan had with the Chavetz Chaim. Rav Elchanan viewed the Chavetz Chaim as his Rebbe from that point on. In many of his writings, he refers to the Chavetz Chaim as HaKadosh Bal HaChavetz Chaim Zatzal. He once remarked about the Chavetz Chaim that it is impossible for us to perceive the full scope of the Chavetz Chaim's greatness because he used his brilliant mind to determine how to conceal his special qualities. He used all of his Chachma, and he was so much more brilliant than everybody else, to figure out how to hide his special qualities. So how can we, with our puny intellects, hope to outsmart him? Meaning, to figure out how great he is, we'd have to outsmart him, because he used all of his intellect to hide how great he is. And we're never going to outsmart the Chavetz Chaim. That was the reverence that Rav Elchanan had for the Chavetz Chaim. Rav Mordechai Zuckerman Zatzal was a Talmud of Radin, and he knew Rav Elchanan well, and he said that Rav Elchanan's face was always aflame with his burning Yiras Shamayim. It's one of those rare faces that, when you look in a picture, you can see it. You see the intensity in his face, even from a photograph. He says, well, Chavetz Chaim was different. He showed no external signs of his greatness. And you see that as well. You look at a picture of the Chavetz Chaim, and there's this incredible pashtus in the face of the Chavetz Chaim, as if he's just a simple Jew. He really tried very hard to conceal his greatness. Rav Elchanan was very visibly a Talmud of the Chavetz Chaim. The Chavetz Chaim, who always hid his greatness, gave no indication of him being a Rebbe of Rav Elchanan or anybody else. Meaning he just didn't hold himself in that way. And the Talmidim in Radin used to see Rav Elchanan go to the Chavetz Chaim's drashas all the time, and Rav Elchanan would just drink with thirst. He would drink in every word that the Chavetz Chaim said. The story goes that once on the Yom Noraim, a Talmud commented that the Chavetz Chaim repeated verbatim a drasha that he had delivered the year before. So Rav Elchanan said, no, this year he changed eight words in the drasha. He knew every single word that the Chavetz Chaim said, and that's how he approached listening to shiurim from the Chavetz Chaim. In 1910, Chavetz Chaim encouraged Rav Elchanan to start a yeshiva, a mesifta in Brisk, and that continued until it was disbanded 4 years later in 1914 with the outbreak of World War I, and then Rav Elchanan went back to the Chavetz Chaim, went back to Radin, and eventually the yeshiva there was closed, because again, there was so much war, there was so much running away that had to be done in the early part of the 20th century, even before the Holocaust, it's hard to imagine just what people went through in order to be able to live Jewish lives and to teach Torah and just to survive. In 1921, after the war, the Soviet government started allowing Torah scholars to leave Russia. So Rav Elchanan moved to a place called Baranovich, and that's where his name was really made. Meaning Rav Elchanan is known as the Rosh Yeshiva of Baranovich. What people don't realize was that Baranovich was what we would call a high school. It was not a yeshiva for 20-21-year-olds. It was a yeshiva for boys between the ages of 13 and 17, roughly. It was, and you look at the Kovitz Shiurim, and you look at the Shiurim Rav Elchanan was giving in Baranovich to teenagers, to young teenagers, and you really feel a sense of Yeridas Hadoros, because most of our young teenagers probably would not be able to follow a shiur on that level. Of course, they were learning all day long. There was no secular studies, let alone basketball team or a hockey team or a debate club or anything else. It was Torah and only Torah, but nevertheless, the level of the limud was just incredible. And the notes that were taken from those shiurim were passed around in the yeshivas in Europe, and that's what developed Rav Elchanan's reputation, because people saw notes from the shiurim of this young Rosh Yeshiva in Baranovich, of this Rosh Yeshiva of what we would call today a Yeshiva Katana, what they would call in Eretz Yisrael, a Yeshiva Katana. And then toward the end of 1937, Rav Elchanan had to come to the United States to raise money for the yeshiva, and he made a tremendous impact on the American Jewish community. He raised very little money. He raised around $10,000 in the whole trip by going all over the country, but he made such an impression on so many Jews in America at the time, and he went back to Poland knowing that he was very likely going back to his death. And because he the way he remarked to people when they tried to convince him to stay is that a captain cannot abandon his ship. And if his Talmidim, he was not going to allow his Talmidim to die alone. He was going to be there with his Talmidim. And there are tremendous accounts of what happened in those final days, how Rav Elchanan dealt with his Talmidim in those final days. You know, one of those days there was an incident where someone asked Rav Elchanan to give a shir in halacha. And Rav Elchanan said, a shir now in these times? And he said, yeah, I'm not asking for just any shir. I want a shir on the topic of the hour, the sugya of Kiddush Hashem. And Rav Elchanan listened to the request, and he asked for time to prepare the shir, and he closed himself off in his room for a long time. And when he finally emerged, you could see in his face a certain passion, a certain fire, and he delivered a shir on Kiddush Hashem with tremendous yira and pachad. And then a few days later, on the 11th of Tammuz, three Lithuanian murderers burst into the home where Rav Elchanan was, and Rav Elchanan was standing in the hallway and learning with Rav Yitzchak Zaks, and Rav Elchanan and another 12 Talmidei Chachamim and Tzaddikim who were in the house at the time, and who didn't have an opportunity to escape and hide, were all taken away to the 7th fort, and then throughout that time, ultimately that led to Rav Elchanan's death sometime later. It was on the 13th of Tammuz that those tzaddikim were murdered, along with 3,000 other Jews, and that's why whenever you hear Rav Elchanan quoted, it is always Hashem Yikom Damo, because he was murdered in the Holocaust. Rav Elchanan left behind a family. His son Elazar Simcha was Rashiva of Beis Yehuda in Detroit in the 1940s, and founded Yeshivas Ar Elchanan. The Rav Elchanan's family certainly left its mark on the Los Angeles community. Rav Simcha Wasserman was Rav Elchanan's son. Rav Elchanan had many, many Talmidim that made their way to America and Eretz Yisrael, and had a tremendous impact on world Jewry. Rav Shmuel Birnbaum, Rav Shneur Cutler, Rav Leib Malin, Rav Nachum Partsavich, Rav David Pavarsky, Rav Moshe Shmuel Shapiro, Rav Simcha Sheps, Rav Simcha Wasserman, Rav Baruch Sarotsky, all of these Talmidim of Rav Elchanan in one way or the other. His Chidushei Torah are phenomenal. They're phenomenal in the sense that it really reflects most of his Chiddush Torah in learning, like in Masechtas and in Kovitz, in his Sefer Kovitz Shirim on the Masechtas and Kovitz Ha'aros on the Rashba and Yevamos are really in the style of Reb Chaim Soloveitchik, more so than in the style of the Chafetz Chaim. He used to quote Reb Chaim Soloveitchik. Reb Chaim Soloveitchik would say that producing Chiddush Torah is not really our job. That was for the Rishonim to do. Our job is to understand what the Rishonim said. And that was very much Reb Chaim's style. I think I once heard Meir Tversky say that to summarize Reb Chaim's derech in learning, it was the derech, you know, up until that point, people would say, oh, if there's a machlokas, Rambam and Ravid, we have to figure out who's right. We have to figure out who's correct and bring proofs which one got it correctly. Rav Chaim's chiddush in learning was that the Ravid knew how to learn also, was that they both had a point of view. And they're both right, because they're just there's tzvei dinim, and this one is emphasizing that din, and that one's emphasizing the other din. And Rav Elchanan is very much of that mindset. And he wrote not only in halacha, but in hashkafa as well. And I want to share with you a piece of Torah. I didn't realize how long I'd spend on the biography here, but I wanted to share with you a piece of Torah that he said in hashkafa, in his sefer Kovetz Mamarim, because it relates to yesterday's parsha, even though it's not directly related to the Chavetz Chaim, but his entire worldview and his entire hashkafa relates to the Chafetz Chaim. In fact, I'll just add that in his hesped for the Chafetz Chaim, Rav Elchanan said that everybody learns Chumash from the youngest age children to the Malachi Hashareis, but everyone has a different level of understanding. So Rav Elchanan said, you know, when we think about the Chafetz Chaim, we would need to be the Chafetz Chaim in order to understand the Chafetz Chaim, but we can study the Chafetz Chaim the way a 5-year-old studies Chumash, and we encourage a 5-year-old to study Chumash, even though we know he's not going to understand it on the same level that an adult or a Talmud Chacham would understand it. He said, when we study the Chavetz Chaim, we're studying it like a 5-year-old studies Chumash. Moshe Rabbeinu was the greatest Navi to ever live and achieved closeness to Hashem that no one would ever achieve. But when Moshe dies in Parshas Zos HaBracha, he gets what seems to be a 2-word hesped, that Moshe Rabbeinu died Eved Hashem. And that was the question, the Bader of Elchanan, that he discussed in this hesped for the Chavetz Chaim. Why only really Eved Hashem? Why is that the greatest accolade that one could have? And he says that because there is a halacha that Masha Kana Eved Kana Rabba. Whatever an Eved owns, his master owns. Whatever an Eved acquires, his master acquires. So says Rav Elchanan, the Torah calling Moshe Rabbeinu an Eved Hashem meant that any talent that Moshe Rabbeinu had, any skill he had, all aspects of Moshe Rabbeinu's life were spent using them for the Ribbono Shel Olam. Masha Kana Eved, Kana Rabbo. It was all for the master. That was the greatness of Moshe, and it's a high level that we try to emulate. And he says that that the Chavetz Chaim's entire life was about learning in order to serve, in order to serve the Ribbono Shel Olam. Chavetz Chaim, when he was 4 years old, was playing with his friends, and he knocked over a basket of apples that a woman was selling, and the boys each took an apple and ran away. When he was 6 years old, he learned that that there's a mitzvah in the Torah that you have to return that which you stole, and he wanted to fulfill the mitzvah. His parents had no money, but he begged them for a few pennies each day until he saved up enough, and he went to the woman and bought an apple each day and quickly threw it in her basket and ran away. And that way he was Mekayim Veheshavas Agzela. Rav Elchanan said, starting at the age of 4 and at the age of 6, with that story, the Chavetz Chaim began over 9 decades of just serving the Ribbono Shel Olam with every fiber of his being. And this was the reverence that Rav Elchanan had for the Chavetz Chaim. So I just again want to share with you one Dvar Hashkafa, not a matter of halacha, but a matter of Hashkafa that Rav Elchanan speaks about in his Sefer Kovetz Ma'amarim. Because it relates to yesterday's parsha. In yesterday's parsha, we learn that Yaakov is going to meet up with Esav and the Arameos Ish that are together with Esav. And Yaakov is Vayira Yaakov Mo'od Vayetzerlo. He's terrified. It's, you know, by any natural means, Esav was going to kill Yaakov. His life was over. Meaning, what chance does Yaakov stand against 400 men? What chance does his family stand against 400 men, and he was terrified. He was afraid. Says the Rambam in the Perush HaMishnayis, in the Akdamah to Perush HaMishnayis, the Rambam talks about nevuah and what it takes to be a Navi, what kinds of qualities a person needs to have in order to be a Navi. And the Rambam writes in that context that in order to be a Navi, a person has to be very intelligent, have a developed mind, and also has to have developed midos. A person has to be somebody who's worked on themselves and become somewhat of a tzaddik. However, the Rambam says two caveats. First of all, even if a person has developed his mind and he's an absolute genius and he's a great Torah scholar and he has great developed midos and he's a tzaddik and he's righteous in every which way, there's still no guarantee that he's going to be a Navi. Even kulei hai v'ulai, you do all of that and then maybe you'll be a Navi. But then the second point that the Rambam makes, and this is the point that Rav Elchanan focuses on, the Rambam says that a person has to be highly developed in those two areas, but he need not be perfect in those two areas. A person who does not have perfect midos can still be a Navi. And the Rambam brings a few proofs to that. He said a person can lack bitachon to a certain degree and still be a Navi. Where do we ever find that someone lacked bitachon to a certain degree and was a Navi? The Rambam gives a couple of examples, but I'm only going to mention one of them right now, and that is the example of Yaakov Avinu. That Yaakov Avinu should have trusted Hashem, and he lacked bitachon, he didn't trust Hashem, and nevertheless, Yaakov Avinu was a Navi. So you see that you don't have to be perfect. Vayira Yaakov Mo'od Vayetzalo, he was terrified of Esav. Where's your bitachon, Yaakov? So you see that he lacked bitachon, and nevertheless he was a Navi. So says the Rambam. So Rav Elchanan quotes, asks the Chesed L'Avram, a commentary on the Shmona Prakim. It's not an Akdama to Mishnah Torah, it's in Shmona Prakim, the Rambam's commentary to Pirkei Avos, an Akdama to Pirkei Avos. So asks the Chesed L'Avram on the Shmona Prakim, he says, I don't understand. The Gemara already asks this kasha. The Gemara Maseches Brachos asks, how could Yaakov have been afraid? What about the fact that Hashem promised him that everything is going to be okay? Where's Yaakov's bitachon? And the Gemara already answered the kasha. And the Gemara's answer was not, Einoch Hinami, Yaakov didn't have perfect bitachon. That was not the Gemara's answer. The Gemara's answer to the kasha was, He was afraid, Shema Yigrom Hachet. He was afraid that, yes, Hashem promised me that everything will be okay, but that was based on who I was at the time of the promise. But maybe I've done Averos since then that make the promise null and void. And that's what Yaakov was afraid of. That's what Yaakov Avinu was afraid of. So asks the Chesed Avram, how could it possibly be? How could it possibly be that the Rambam concludes that Yaakov Avinu didn't have perfect bitachon by the fact that he was fearful? He had perfect. The Gemara already dealt with the Kasha and said that he was only afraid because he thought that the promise would no longer apply to him. So says the Chesed Lavram, again Rav Chanan quotes all this, says the Chesed Lavram that there are two types of bitachon that a person must have. There's bitachon sometimes when Hashem promises that something's going to happen. When Hashem tells you that something's going to be, you have to have bitachon that Hashem is telling you the truth, that it in fact is going to be, that it in fact is going to happen. That certainly you have to believe. That is one level of bitachon. But then there's another level of bitachon, and that is most of us don't get any promises from the Ribbono Shel Olam. Most of us don't get any guarantees from the Ribbono Shel Olam. We also have to have bitachon. And that is bitachon that Hashem is going to use his Midas HaRachamim with us. So Yaakov Avinu, the Gemara asks, where is his bitachon? What about Hashem's promise? Well, to that, the Gemara says he was worried that the promise no longer applies. The Rambam says, okay, good, but that just turns Yaakov into the rest of us, where we all have to have bitachon. Where is his bitachon that Hashem is going to use his midas harachamim? And to that, the Chesed Avram writes, that's where the Rambam says he was lacking somewhat in bitachon. So asks Rav Elchanan, this is where Rav Elchanan, you know, flexes his muscles a little bit. He says, I don't understand this answer of the Chesed Avram. Follow me on this. Rav Elchanan says, there's a comment of the Shlach HaKadosh. The Gemara tells us that Moshe Rabbeinu wanted to see all future generations and how they would behave and what would happen, who the leaders would be. Dor, dor, v'dor, shav. He wanted to see the leaders of each generation. And he was shown Rabbi Akiva. And he was shown that Rabbi Akiva was tying the ksarim, the crowns, on top of the osios. I'm sorry, that Rabbi Akiva darshened the crowns on top of the osios. Tilei tilim shel halachos. Rabbi Akiva was a greater Torah scholar than Moshe Rabbeinu himself. Moshe Rabbeinu sat in Rabbi Akiva's shir, according to the Gemara, and didn't understand what Rabbi Akiva was saying. That's how high level Rabbi Akiva was. So Moshe turns to the Ribbono Shel Olam and he says, Ribbono Shel Olam, zu Torah? He says, let me see what the schar for this Torah is. And Hashem showed Rabbi Akiva being murdered viciously by his executioners. And Moshe Rabbeinu says, Ribbono Shel Olam, zu Torah v'zu schara? How could it be that such great Torah scholarship and he meets such a terrible end? And Hashem says, shtok, be quiet, kach ala b'machshava lefanai. This is what I thought to do. Kach ala b'machshava lefanai. So the Shlach HaKadosh says, what do you mean kach ala b'machshava lefanai? It happened. It actually happened. Rabbi Akiva was murdered viciously. It wasn't just ala b'machshava, this is what I thought to do. So says the Shlach HaKadosh, what it means is that when the Ribbono Shel Olam created the world, the Medrash tells us, it was ala b'machshava. He wanted to create the world with pure Midas Hadin. But he saw the world wasn't going to be able to survive with Midas Hadin, so he was Mishtatef Midas HaRachamim together with Midas Hadin. And what HaKadosh Baruch Hu was telling Moshe Rabbeinu was, everyone else gets Midas HaRachamim, but every once in a while, a tzaddik comes along who can live based on the original plan of pure Midas Hadin. And if you can live that way, and you can die that way, the ticket to Olam Haba is something that's beyond where anyone else will get. HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe Rabbeinu, Shtok, kach ala b'machshava lefanai. I treat Rabbi Akiva like I originally planned to create the world, with pure Midas Hadin, and that's why he suffers so terribly, because his ticket to Olam Haba is a straight ticket. It's not Nama to Kisufa. He's not going to be embarrassed to receive the bounty of Olam Haba, because he will have earned every cent of that bounty of Olam Haba. Says Rav Elchanan, if that's correct, who was greater, Rabbi Akiva or Yaakov Avinu? You have to imagine Yaakov Avinu was greater than Rabbi Akiva. So says Rav Elchanan, the Chesed Avram wanted to tell us that what the Rambam meant when he said Yaakov was imperfect was that the Yaakov Avinu lacked the bitachon that we all have to have in what? In Midas HaRachamim, in Hashem using his Midas HaRachamim. Rav Elchanan says, someone of the level of Yaakov Avinu, of the caliber of Yaakov Avinu, need not have any bitachon that Hashem is going to use his Midas HaRachamim. Because someone of the caliber of Yaakov Avinu should have been pure Midas HaDin. He was at least as great as Rabbi Akiva. And therefore he says, I'm back to my kasha. How could the Rambam say that Yaakov Avinu was lacking and still became a Navi? It's a different type of Devar Hashkafa that Rav Elchanan shares. It's a kind of genius to be able to put all of these sources together. And he leaves it as a kasha. He leaves it as a tzorachiyun, as something to think about. How could the Rambam say that Yaakov lacked in Midas HaBitachon if, after all, the Midas HaBitachon that he was supposed to have was in Midas HaRachamim, and Hashem using Midas HaRachamim, but someone of the Madrega of Rabbi Akiva or more doesn't need a Bitachon Midas HaRachamim. It would be inappropriate to have a Bitachon Midas HaRachamim because he'd be treated purely with Midas HaDin. So I'll leave you with that kasha. I have some thoughts on what the answer might be, but we're out of time for right now. And Be'ezras Hashem, I look forward to seeing everybody next month when we discuss a different Gadol and Rabbi Talmud relationship between two Gedolei Torah.
Thank you so much. Everybody should have a wonderful